Good morning, I'm Matt Schaefer. Welcome to the Boston Sunday Review. What's the latest news from space? Well, we've welcomed in our old buddy Jonathan McDowell, astrophysicist with the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics and the Chandra X-ray Center. He joins us this morning on the BSR. Jonathan, good morning.
Good morning, Matt. It's great to be back.
And as we are recording, pre-recording this week, this interview, there are two astronauts on the International Space Station out doing a spacewalk. Why?
Well, they're having a bit of a problem with their cooling system, with the plumbing. And, you know, when you're out there in space, you can't really call out for the plumbers. So they have to fix it themselves. They've gotten in their spacesuits. They have to do a series of three spacewalks over the next few days to take out a broken pump module, which is a thing about the size of a refrigerator, and replace it with a spare that they have stashed already elsewhere on the outside of the space station. And this is a tricky business because this refrigerator thing is filled with ammonia, and you don't want to be breathing that, so you don't want to get it on the outside of your suit and then bring it indoors. And they have a lot of fiddly connectors that they have to fight with unscrewing and screwing. So it's really one of the trickier, although perhaps not one of the more exciting, spacewalks that the astronauts end up doing.
It's my understanding that they don't do spacewalks unless they have to.
Well, they have some spacewalks that they plan in advance, and earlier in the station program, when they were putting the space station together, they did a lot of planned spacewalks to assemble the different parts of the space station. But nowadays, more of the spacewalks are to repair things that have gone wrong. And you're absolutely right. You don't just, like, put on your spacesuit and go out for a stroll. It's something that you is very tightly choreographed. It's very tightly planned. And they only do normally a few a year.
And you don't put on your spacesuit and go out for a stroll when the spacesuit is screwing up.
That's right. We had a very scary incident earlier this year with the Italian astronaut Luca Parmitano, who was in the first hour of his spacewalk, and his space helmet started filling up with water. And if you can imagine that you're hanging there in the vacuum of space, you're tethered to the space station, and suddenly you're breathing water. Your helmet is filling up with this stuff, and the water's getting in your eyes, and you can't see, and you're quite away from the airlock. It must have been pretty scary. And so he had to be sort of led back to the airlock and pretty much blind and having great difficulty breathing. And then they got him the airlock, emergency repressurization of the airlock, got the helmet off. And they found that there was some malfunctioning widget in the spacesuit that was letting air from the cooling system get into his helmet. And they think they fixed it.
But nevertheless, they have jerry-rigged snorkels that the astronauts will be carrying with them during these series of spacewalks.
That's right. And they have a special absorbent pad on the back of their helmet. So if they move their head a little back, they can feel whether or not it's squishy to see whether or not water is accumulating in the helmet.
So is it because of this water glitch that NASA is now testing a new spacesuit redesigned from the pumpkin suits of the shuttle era?
I don't think it's related to that, because they've been preparing this new suit for a while now. I don't know too much about the details of it, but you know, with the coming forward to the Orion program, where they're going to be sending astronauts out into deep space, there are new constraints on the spacesuits. And it's been a while. These shuttle spacesuits really were designed in the 70s. So technology's moved on. And you'd like a suit that's easier to use, that lasts longer, that's easier to maintain.
So what's the lifespan of the International Space Station? And is this problem with the cooling system perhaps foreshadowing bigger issues in the years to come?
Well, it's interesting. They had a similar failure about 3-4 years ago when they had to change out their pump module at this exact same location. It had been going for about 10 years. The replacement that they put in only lasted about 3 years. So things are starting to fail. A lot of this stuff has been up there for a long time. They seem pretty confident that they can fly the station through at least 2020, maybe through the mid-2020s. But at a certain point, the fundamental systems of the station start to degrade. And at that point, you have to get rid of it. And it's always possible that they will have some horrible malfunction that they can't fix that will force them to abandon the station earlier than that. So, for example, right now, they have two cooling systems. One of them's down. If the other one failed today before they fixed the first one, then they could be in a position where they'd have to abandon the station fairly quickly if they didn't make immediate repairs.
How many crew on the shuttle at any time?
There are about six people on the station now most of the time. So they have crews of three, and they have two crews on board that overlap. So one lot comes up while the old lot is still there. They learn from the first lot, and then they trade out on sort of several-month intervals.
And where are they from?
So the International Space Station has really become very international. We have mostly American and Russian crew on the space station, but also Europeans, Canadians and Japanese, and Koichi Wakata.
And Italian.
And, well, Europeans, yeah, okay. they count. yes, no, we've had Italian. We've had a Belgian commander of the space station. We've just entering the first Japanese commander of the space station coming up.
What's the selection process, and how much of it is sort of, you know, kumbaya political?
Well, of course, each country selects its own astronauts, and they have a very rigorous process to do that. But when you decide who's going to go up on a particular flight, yeah, there's a little political horse trading of, well, it's time for the Japanese to fly one. Not as much as there used to be. I think they sort of average it out over a period of years to make sure that everyone gets their fair turn.
And Russian rockets are the only crew transport at this point, correct?
Right. If you want to fly to the space station, there's only one ticket you can get, and that's on the Russian Soyuz spaceship. The shuttle is retired, and the Dragon spaceship that SpaceX is building isn't ready to carry astronauts just yet.
And therefore, are Russian rockets the only option in case of evacuation?
Yeah, the Soyuz is the emergency escape capsule. They have two of them docked to the station. And so if there's a fire on board or a piece of space debris hits the space station, they have to get out quick. Three of them run to one Soyuz and three of them run to the other. And so while they're depressurizing the airlock, for example, often they go into the Soyuzes just in case there's a problem so that they don't get trapped in
the
station.
So they have escape rockets on the station that will allow them to leave. We wouldn't have to send someone up to get them.
That's right. Yeah. No. They thought through that one, and the escape pods are the same ships that they got there in. So whenever you take a ride to the space station, your taxi stays parked at the gate until you're ready to go home.
How long are the missions, and does each mission do its own work, or does it continue the missions of previous missions?
Well, there's a mixture of tasks that each expedition, they call them expeditions on the space station, has to do. And there's some real ongoing work studying the effects of radiation, studying the effects of weightlessness. But there's also shorter-term experiments that each expedition brings up. And they range from new advanced technology. There's some folks at MIT who have these things called spheres, which are little mini spacecraft that fly around within the space station. The astronauts play with controlling them with a little joystick. There's some experiments with robots. There's this very cutesy Kirobo robot that the Japanese put up that has little conversations with the Japanese astronaut, and I'm not quite sure what it proves, but there's a range of stuff that they do.
Why is microgravity a good atmosphere for science?
Well, it really is an environment that you don't get on the Earth. And for certain kinds of science, microgravity is very interesting. You can separate out different chemicals, different substances. You can study the effects of microgravity on living organisms, and that, you know, every time you change a variable, you switch gravity off, and you go, what happens to humans when you switch gravity off? And that teaches you something about how humans work even when gravity is on down here on Earth. There are other kinds of science where you don't care so much about the microgravity, but what you care about is access to vacuum. So being outside the atmosphere, being able to see the sky, although for astronomy missions, you mostly don't want to be on the station because you don't want the astronauts to jiggle the telescope. There is, however, one big experiment on the station that's a particle detector, a bit like they have at CERN, the Hadron Collider people. They have an antimatter detector that's a big lump of stuff outside the space station that's starting to return interesting results.
How serious is the problem of space debris, in other words, orbiting trash around our planet?
Well, you know, you can't take humans anywhere. They always litter, and the various ecological problems in space, of which the worst is space debris, are really starting to be a big issue now. We see small debris impacts. Even on the space shuttle missions, they would come down and there would be little like bullet holes in the radiators of the space shuttle due to pieces of space debris whizzing by. We've had a couple of collisions now, one very serious one between a working satellite and a dead satellite a few years ago that generates a lot more space debris. And so it's something that's now a daily working problem for operators of space stuff, that they keep having to go, is there any space debris in my path? Do I have to move my spaceship out of the way? And it's only going to get worse, I think.
Are there any international regulations governing hardware in low Earth orbit?
We're really just starting to evolve a code of conduct for how you operate in low Earth orbit. And a number of countries have been very resistant to accepting any restrictions on what they can do in space. But now there's some progress in agreeing that, yeah, you know, we've really got to start regulating how we use space. We've got to start agreeing on what to do and what not to do. There has been a lot of progress in reducing the amount of trash that launches generate. And for example, when you put a satellite in space, a rocket goes with it. If the rocket has fuel left on it, it might blow up later when because of the leftover fuel. So you do two things. You use up the fuel by firing the rocket engine again, and if possible, you lower the orbit of the rocket so it re-enters quickly. And that's happening much more now. So number of debris objects that are being generated is smaller than it was at a certain point, but you only need a few bad accidents to put that right back up again.
What did you see in the movie Gravity that I did not?
Well, Gravity was, I have to say first, it was great fun. And it really gave a nice atmosphere of what it's like being in space. They did a really nice job of reconstructing the hardware accurately. You could really tell the difference between, you know, the interior decor of the American side and the Russian side of the space station. They got all that exactly right. There were, however, some issues, and which they could have got around by just explaining with a little voiceover at the beginning that this takes place in the future. They've resurrected the shuttle. They've moved the Chinese and the Chinese station and the Hubble to the same orbit as the space station, because right now they're in totally different orbits. orbits, so none of that plotline would work out. The worst part was, when I don't want to spoil it for people who haven't seen it, but
Spoiler alert.
George Clooney is playing an astronaut who is hanging on to the space station, and then he lets go, and he kind of gets pulled away. And that really wouldn't happen. There's nothing to pull him away when he's in space. He'd just hang out there floating. But I can rec on that by saying that the space station maybe was moving away from him because there was a hole in it, pushing it away. So you can, if you think hard enough, you can fix most of the problems.
What are SpaceX and Orbital Sciences?
So SpaceX and Orbital Sciences are two companies that are trying to do human spaceflight in a new way, or the space station program in a new way. And they have contracts with NASA to deliver cargo to the space station. So it used to be that NASA would pay a lot of money and tell a company, build this, and NASA will fly it, and NASA will dock it to the space station. Now NASA's just saying, oh, here's some money. We want our cargo and our sandwiches and our various other things that we want on the space station. Just, knock at the door and deliver them. And it's your problem how to get them there.
Are they in competition or are they in cooperation?
Oh, they're very much in competition. And it's sort of interesting. Orbital used to be the spunky new kid in the business. It came around in the early 90s, and it was going to show Boeing and Lockheed and the other big aerospace companies a new way to do things. And now, 20 years on, it's an established player, and SpaceX has come along and positioning itself as the new revolutionary company with a lot of young people, with a lot of new ways of doing things. So Orbital is delivering cargo to the space station, and they fulfilled that NASA contract very much to the letter. They designed a spaceship that will deliver cargo to the space station. SpaceX, for the same, essentially the same contract, they have a different motivation because Elon Musk, the billionaire behind it, who made his money with PayPal, wants to go to Mars. And so pretty much everything he does is organizing to help get Elon to Mars. And so his spaceship that he built not only delivers cargo to the space station, but it's designed to be the basis of his future Mars spaceship. And so it can take astronauts with a few modifications. It can do a lot more things. And so SpaceX is showing a sort of bigger picture and has its own agenda beyond just making money. And so that's an interesting dynamic, and it's not clear yet how that will work out commercially.
And very briefly, what is the Orion multipurpose crew vehicle, and when can we expect to see it roll out?
Mm-hmm. So Orion is the other part of NASA, the old way of doing things, which is appropriate for the frontier. The reason why they went to SpaceX and these other companies like Orbital for the Earth orbit pizza delivery job is that, we kind of know how to do that now. Going to Mars, going to the moon, going to asteroids, that's sort of a new frontier. And so we're going to do that the old way with a purely NASA spaceship. The Orion is kind of like the old Apollo. It's a scaled-up Apollo. It has a command module, a conical capsule that
the
astronauts sit in.
It replaces the shuttle, basically.
It sort of replaces the shuttle, but it's not the same as the shuttle. It's not the thing that you're going to use to go up and down to the space station in, by and large. It's the thing that you're going to use to go beyond the space station, to go into deep space.
And when can we see it or expect to
see
it?
So the first test flight without astronauts on board is going to be this coming year, with luck, and they're going to send it out into a high Earth orbit and test it coming back in a very fast reentry to make sure the heat shield works before they put anyone in it, which is a good plan. And then there's going to be a bit of a break, and they work up the launch vehicles. And toward the end of this decade, I think they're still saying 2018. I don't know that I believe that. They'll start flying human missions with the Orion, one of the early missions will be a flight around the moon, a bit like Apollo 8.
When we come back, why the moon is back in the news after we pause for these words. You're listening to the Boston Sunday Review.